Wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast, I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake, this is our Olympic special. We're not doing a full-on Olympic special.
No, that's what I mean. It's not a special. It's our topic is Olympics, but it's not like we've done before where we've really top to bottom covered the Olympics, I think, over two episodes or something, maybe.
Because by the time you hear this, the Olympics will be up to swing. So using us as some sort of informational preview would be...
That's right.
Yeah, we would be... redundant, I think is the best way to put it. And also, we were thrown out of schedule because we've had some other events going on.
This is your first podcast as a married man.
Yes.
Does it feel much better? A bit different?
The podcasting experience is different.
Yeah.
How come? I feel older and now more responsible.
You're older every time.
Older every time, yeah.
So it didn't, but the wedding itself made you feel older?
Yes, it did. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, the wedding was a nice experience for me because, of course, you knew everybody who was going to be at your own wedding. I didn't know anybody personally.
I knew most of the people at my own wedding. Let me put it that way.
But I didn't know everybody personally, and so we had at least two folks who came up and talked about how much they loved the podcast. One of them I had emailed with before, Brooke.
Yes.
She provided some advice before when I was going to Africa about like trips over there, and she said, "Oh, you're Eric," and we had a whole conversation about the podcast and what a big fan she is, and that was very helpful.
You're like a celebrity. You were really.
I believe you were the central celebrity. Huh. When I gave a little. Wasn't a toast, but like when everybody was talking at your rehearsal dinner, which came after a total absence of rehearsal.
Yes.
Let's mind you. So we're calling it a rehearsal dinner is probably misleading, but I did comment that I was the sidekick from the Atlantic Voice podcast.
Yeah, I thought I was very unfair, actually, on yourself.
Oh, I'm being self-effacing.
Yes, well, no, we want to thank Brooke.
Jenny was who I had not met before. At least I don't think I've met
before.
Yeah,
we had some people.
I feel bad if they email in later on and say, no, I have met you before, Eric, but.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's my wedding. I can't worry about it.
They were very, very nice. Yeah. I tell you what makes it different. It reinvigorated my zeal for the show because sometimes, like I know certain people listen, they told me to listen. They don't like come back and tell me, oh, I'm still listening or, you know, there's no sort of, hey, wow, some other people are enjoying this. So to my mind, it was like a new listener in a sense because somebody actually who I'd never spoken to before affirmatively said nice things about the podcast.
And I do think, funnily enough, we're not making this show all about just two of our fans. They really are fans. They do actually listen.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people.
Each one of them were like, they fashion themselves as fans. So.
And when they started talking about previous shows, I was actually surprised by my own ignorance terms of not knowing what they were talking about.
Do we need like a little name for them? Like avians?
Avians?
Yeah, avian is like birds, right?
I don't know. Atlanteans? There has to be something to do because avian. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
T-Avian, the Atlantic Voice, and T-Avian.
T-A-Vs. Tavs.
Tavs.
There you go.
As opposed to like wags and
wives and girlfriends.
Yeah,
which of course I now.
There you
have.
Go.
I now well, have that to bring you back.
You have one of those. You
know, we didn't. we had threatened to actually record from the wedding.
Yes, I should point.
But let me just say that sometimes.
Did you have equipment up front? Did I see a little bag with the equipment and it never got opened?
I did bring some equipment, but to be frank with you, if I wanted to end the evening officially married, it was probably best to leave the equipment away.
Every time we would mention this, pretty much everybody, not just your now wife, then fiance, but pretty much everybody was like, no, that's not happening. Yeah. I said, I don't know, Zeph seems pretty serious about it.
Yeah,
I'm not knocking myself out.
I do feel it was a missed opportunity. Yeah. I also want to thank a whole group of people, as is the case nowadays. Someone, I think it actually was the aforementioned Brooke, posted online greetings. Like, hey, I was at this wedding. Congratulations to my friend.
Posted online where?
Posted on Facebook. Oh. I'm not a big Facebook person. I am on Facebook. I only use it to promote the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't interact with people otherwise, except maybe using the messenger service. I had about 80 people like her post, and then about another, within the 80 people, about 30 people actually send me messages. And because I don't, I'm going, oh, congratulations. And I want to shout out a whole group of people.
Okay. More avians?
Yes. Well, I don't know. They're just
people. TAVs.
I don't know. We hope they will become that way. But I want to shout out all the Fetty's College 85ers. Who shouted me out? And wait, they know who
say
they
those
are.
Words again.
Fetty's College.
Okay, stop there. What college?
Fetty's.
What word is that?
You're saying? It's in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Fettes. Okay. Fettes College 85ers.
So that's a college, it's Fettes.
Yeah, so and it's the 85ers are a subgroup of people. They're all basically all these old buddies from the past.
Sure.
Who I haven't spoken to in 30 years.
Uh-huh.
Facebooked me. They didn't just like the post. They sent messages going, oh, congratulations, old friend, and all this kind of thing. And I want to thank them, because they're all kinds of people I haven't spoken to in 40 years, who actually took the time mm-hmm. to type a personal message. And because I don't do Facebook...
Probably less than 40 years. I mean, it's Fettes College 85, so I assume you spoke to them sometime around 85.
Yes, so that's about 30 years. Yeah, yeah. Because I don't interact on Facebook, I want all of you to know, you won't be getting anything back from me, but thank you for your good wishes. Uh-huh. Which I thought was just kind of interesting, the way social media...
Maybe
no one actually responded to the Twitter... Because I'm on Twitter as well. Again, to just promote the show. I don't do social media, like, as a person.
Yeah, you do it more than I do, so.
Well, no, but I only do it to push the show.
Yeah.
I mean, really, if
what other reason is there?
Well, that's what I mean. So, anyway, I wanted to thank all of them, because that was a whole group of people.
All right.
And, like I say, within there, if I then post on Facebook, hey, you're getting thanked, then we might get a lot of cheap clicks for the next show, if nothing else. They might not stay with us for any longer than that, unlike Brooke and Jenny, who you met last week. But anyway, so that was the wedding, the big social event of the year.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, it was done fun.
I have noticed one thing, though. My wife's name is misspelled on the marriage license, so that would allow me to get out of it if I'm having second thoughts at this time.
No? I think that would be considered just, you know, a typographical error. It does not change the legal force of the event.
I don't know. With the right legal help, I think I could swing something.
Yeah. Hopefully this is not the first time she hears about it. You might want to mention it to her before you put it on the podcast.
No, because she doesn't listen to the show, which means I still have this ace in the hole if I ever need to get out of Dodge.
I'm busting you out.
Oh, okay.
All right, so Olympics, they're upon us. We are actually, unlike a lot of other things we comment on, where we, you know, pretend to be experts. We've actually been to an Olympics within the last, I would say 4 years.
Well, yes, that's how they roll around. We went to London 2012
mm-hmm.
and went to about, I think I went to four events. I think you ended up going to five or six because you, I think, didn't you go to gymnastics and beach volleyball? Or did you go to one of those?
No, both. Gymnastics, beach volleyball, track and field, indoor volleyball, badminton.
We went to a soccer match.
Handball,
that's soccer, right.
That's seven right there.
Yeah. And we also saw the bike race.
Bike race.
I mean, that still counts.
Yeah, I was going to say. Because a bunch of days, it was like two events a day. So.
Yeah. So we went last time. And I must say, I've never been the biggest Olympic fan. So I'm gonna set out my stall right now as we head into this show. I'm a slight Olympic contrarian. But I will say this. When I went to London... And, I need to be entirely fair. When the Olympics is in your own, for me, my old hometown, it did resonate differently. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
We're now a couple of days into the Olympics. Having the TV back on again, watching the Olympics, I'm back to my old position of, all this kind of sucks. I mean, I'm an Olympic contrarian, and we're going to cover some stuff as to why I'm an Olympic
contrarian. You're just a slight Olympic contrarian.
Yeah.
Only slightly contrarian. If you were not already married, you'd be a full contrarian, but now you've moderated in your views.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
But actually, no, I'm not going to moderate my views. Marriage isn't going to change the quality of the show, which for a lot of people is probably a negative. It's not going to
We were kind of hoping it would. I'll let you go. And I'll respond in terms of whether it's better. It's definitely not better, but it's. I don't know if I'm contrarian. The hard part is you could when you go to it. Here's what I'll say before you go. You've dedicated your time to going to it. Like when it's on TV. Like even though we could talk about the TV events, the events we went to when we were there were none of them were particularly big. We went to medal matches in badminton, but other than that, it was all preliminary. Yeah. It's a random games or things like that. But you're there and you're doing it and you're spending all your time. You're not working and like. This is going to be different here because you have all the regular concerns of life.
Well,
and so it's just a TV show.
Yeah. And
so you can't expect it to be as good.
That's true. But it was interesting, though. And I want to refer back to our last show where we talked about my European holiday watching sports events.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we did have the discussion about going to things to see practice, but watching them on TV. And I think I made the point in the last show that in terms of things like the Tour de France and the British Open and some of the events I went to, I enjoyed seeing it one time, but ultimately in the future, in terms of actually enjoying the sports itself, it's far better to sit at home and watch it on TV. Having been to the Olympics, and again, you rightly point out, we saw, you know, volleyball and badminton and handball, sports that I think it's fair to say, not knocking them as sports, they're not sports that we as armchair fans are normally.
No, I don't have.
You know, I'm not sitting around going, oh,
I don't get hopefully a subscription volleyball. To volleyball monthly.
Right. I found the Olympics much better to go to now that I'm back as an armchair fan. It's this weird sort of disconnect between. And again, I think what makes the Olympics great is everything about it. It's all in one place. It sort of takes over that locale, and it really does take over. I remember being in London, and it felt like it was this sort of 18-hour nonstop. Sure. Even if you weren't at something, you were very conscious walking down the street, walking past people, standing outside the pub, trying to see the TV or the mm-hmm. coffee shop, that something was going on every minute of the day. Now that I'm back watching it on TV, I'm sitting here going, ooh, when are my regular shows going to come back on? Now, that's kind of harsh, but I'm not. I don't know. It's interesting. Once you are removed by the space of television, sports that are curiosities, they no longer hold as much curiosity for me.
I don't know.
I think that's one. We'll
come back to the sports. There's a couple of sports I think that I think they're maybe better on TV because you can figure out what's going on.
That's
whereas,
true. Yeah.
Some of these, if you were there live, you'd be like, I don't really get it. But before we even get to that, before the sports start, you have to talk about all the athletes and their experience there. I mean, no big secret to anybody who's listening. The Rio Olympics, a little bumpy road getting here, I guess. You know,
is it?
See,
this is the thing now. When you and I, you know, threw down a couple of topics of discussion on this Olympics, and one of them was Rio and just facilities in general.
Right.
And I think you've got to be living on the moon if you've not, in the last month, read some story about pollution or the roof caving in at the Olympic Village and all this kind of thing. And I remember reading some of these stories, and I'm not going to sit here and turn around and say that, you know, Rio is some sort of, you know, it's not. I don't want to be mean about Rio, but it's not like some sort of really got its act together city like, you know, Berlin or one of these places, or Tokyo or whatever. But I'm suddenly thinking, is that really the case? Or do they just, what I'm saying is it part of Olympic buildup to just roll out stories about how the fact it's all falling down?
And a bunch of people, you know, there were a lot of tweeted pictures now. You got all the athletes can immediately send out information. And so there was pictures of rooms that people arrived at. I think some sort of Indian team arrived, and there was no furniture in any of their places. It was just empty rooms. They had some bag chairs. You know, other folks who were like on these basketball players or on these beds that were seemed to be 5 feet long and jammed two into like a corner kind of thing. It's a picture of I forget his first name, Bogut, the basketball player from Australia, having to put up his own shower curtains. Like, so like they just had the shower curtains folded up, and you had to do a little thing like where you would go to college and you'd have to hang on little latches on all the hooks.
Yeah, that what a hardship for these it's top not, athletes
the
to
point,
hang
the
their
point,
own shower.
Point wasn't
coat.
It's a hardship, but I will say that what it made me think of is, why are they in dorms in the first place? Like,
because that's the Olympic experience, isn't it?
Why? Why don't we just? Why couldn't they be in hotel rooms?
Oh, and they just sort of fend for themselves like any other pro team.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, there's 11,000 athletes supposedly, and I couldn't find any stats of the number of people being there, but they're supposedly. I know in the buildup they were going to like 50,000 hotel rooms in the city area or something like that, which to my mind seems a little bit low, but. But I don't know why. Like, I get the fact that at once upon a time you'd put the amateur athletes in dorms because, like, the notion of a hotel itself was.
Because it truly was this sort of, you know, amateur slash YMCA slash backpacking type experience.
People didn't really go to fancy hotels. Yeah. But now, when everything from your, you know, Holiday Inn Express is pretty reasonable, normal accommodations done in a mass-produced way. does it really cost that much more to build that than it does to build these buildings, which, since they're dorms, what do you do with them afterwards anyway? You must tear them down, right? What did they do with the dorms in England?
Well, it was interesting because I was reading some stuff online this week, and obviously in the build-up to the Rio Games, a lot of the British media were sort of looking back at London 2012, right. And they were running a lot of stories about sustainability was this big word right. that had followed the London Olympics around in terms of what's the legacy going to be. And what was going to happen to all these really impressive structures that were built specifically for the Olympics. And I think they made the point that the ex-Olympic Village is slowly being converted into, you know, flats, apartments, accommodation. You know, a lot of the structures still exist as they were. I think the velodrome is pretty much as it was. The actual track and field stadium has now been taken over by West Ham United yeah. Football Club. I think the swimming pool is pretty much as it was.
Yeah. Well, once you have an aquatic center, you can basically that can be the hub of your sport in the country.
And they were sort of saying that, you know, yeah, it's there. It will probably end up turning into something. But even 4 years after, it's still in this sort of never world of kind of slight ghost town.
Neverworld or Netherworld?
Netherworld is like when it's in between two worlds.
I said Neverworld.
Neverworld, whatever. Never with a V or never with a T and H, depending how you pronounce it. But it sort of exists. It's not a ghost town, but it hasn't suddenly flourished right. into this vibrant, wow, look at the suburb of Olympia now type thing. And but this does
it's like the Olympic Village in Rio going to become the world's biggest...
another slum.
No, what do they call
it? I don't want to be mean, but...
The travelers, like, you know, cheap travelers. What's the places called that you stay if you're...
Motel 6.
No. Like, meaning like you're in college and YMCA, you stay at a...
Airbnb.
No, not those things. It's like a...
Dorm.
No.
Campus.
I'm just blanking out at it. All right. Just go on with something. I'll figure it out what it is.
Well, I want to say this in terms of the point about is the Olympic Village itself, should it be an anachronism? And you've just made the point that why can't I just stay in hotels? Well, here's the interesting thing now, and this is going to lead to some of our conversation about the Olympics and what it has become. 30 years ago and prior to that, the Olympics was the pinnacle of amateur athletics. But now the Olympics has morphed into, there are probably still some rank amateurs. If you're a table tennis player or a fencer or equestrian, you are still a rank amateur. But, you know, if you're playing Olympic tennis or Olympic basketball or, frankly, Olympic soccer or even Olympic track and field, you're a full-on pro now.
Yeah.
And so really, what's your interest in staying in some? I mean, you know, I kind of, you know, in a strange way, I'm going to give the Australian, what's his name, NBA player some credit for actually staying in the Olympic dorm. Because frankly, these pros now, what do they need to be at the Olympic Village for?
No.
If my regular existence is staying in hotels as I, you know, play with the Boston Celtics flying around, you know, the US on a 9-game road trip. Well, what the heck do I want to go to the Olympics for 2 weeks for and stay in basically a college / boarding school dormitory?
Yeah, well,
I don't know. I mean, this is the thing. What is the Olympic Village? And it's all tied in, for me, it's all tied into what the Olympics is. And I'm not sure what the Olympics is.
According to Hope Solo, it's where everybody hooks up and has a big old party
apparently they all get issued like 45. Something is like, you know, 100,000 condoms were delivered to the to the Olympic Village, which is, I'm like, yeah, okay.
I don't know if you can trust Hope Solo's stories. But anyway, so speaking of that, like the USA basketball team and the women's, both men's and women's both, are staying in a luxury cruise ship.
Happened a couple of years ago.
No, they've been doing it for a bunch of years.
Piled on them.
Yeah.
But now it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Well, and they said, like, you know, apparently they've got lots of friends and family, and, you know, it becomes a big trip. I mean, there's got to be an incentive for you to be a pro to go, and it isn't like to go sleep in dorm rooms, you know, after you've been making millions of dollars a year. So you go show up and you do this, and I can see that it's perfectly fine. And they point, like, at least they say, you know, let's all be clear. Cruise rooms, these aren't like palatial, like top of the building Las Vegas types of suites or something like that. They're little rooms, you know, with maybe they got a window or porthole window or something like that. So they just sort of stay there because they could, and probably make sense not get harassed or something like that.
Of course, if you do that, you are going to miss out on according to Hope Solo, the orgy of post-event partying.
Maybe it's the other members of the basketball team's families who don't want that to occur. You know, that's why they stay with their families, and their family's like, you're not going to that.
I don't know. I just felt some of these stories. I mean, I remember when
you were saying, like, you think it's all made up.
I do feel it's one of those things. I remember before the Sochi Olympics.
It certainly can be overhyped, you know.
Yeah, I think it's one of those stories now where, you know, sort of the editor or news producer sits around in the editorial room and says, do we have any stories about iffy facilities? Let's go and bung that up, whether that's the case or not. And I do feel it now seems to be an ongoing narrative with the Olympics, that prior to any Olympics, let's pick something that's really, really bad and scare everyone with it. I remember prior to the Beijing Olympics, every story seemed to be about smog. And before the British Olympics, it's going to be, ooh, terrorism.
Well, Athens was another one where they said nothing's built.
Nothing's built. And yeah, everything's built and everything's fine. I mean, haven't watched the Rio Olympics so far, I'm not aware that any of these facilities are halfway. And I know that, you know, TV's not going to show you.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Like, I know there's probably something to be said for the fact that these little stories get hyped up because people are talking about how underprepared they are. But I also think once it actually starts and NBC is in its full public interest story,
country.
But NBC is, there's no chance NBC would really say anything negative about the Olympics because they are fully on with their contract. Just the same way
their contract
ESPN gets a hard time for being too nice to the NFL because they're like, we're not going to bite the hand that feeds us. So once the Olympics actually start, I do think there's something to say that's probably undersold the amount of things that might be going on that are problems.
I read somewhere, and this might not be correct, but NBC, the IOC are into the NBC or vice versa are into the IOC for $6 billion over the next 20 years.
Yeah.
And at that moment, you are correct. When I've spent that kind of money on a product, it actually isn't in my best interests as a major sponsor. And let's not muck about. American television alone is the most important single customer for the Olympics. I mean, I think that's the case. I think whatever US TV pays doesn't dwarf.
They might not pay.
What I'm saying is, if the TV rights are 100%, the $6 billion that NBC pays for the US market is about 75% of the total rights fees. What I'm saying is the Olympic Committee can give or take whatever the BBC pay or whatever Channel 9 in Australia pay. At the end of the day, are being paid by whatever American television
The reason I make the noise is not because of those countries. There's not enough people there. The reason I make that noise is because of China. Now, at this point where you have an emerging situation there with
it. You are correct.
You know, one quarter of the world's population in one market, basically, you know, that and it's probably all controlled by a governmental thing. So I'd be interested in knowing. I don't have the information here about how much how much money they get out of that. I mean, look at the way the movies work, how much they're tailored around the Asian market.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Speaking of revenue, right? Where are you getting your revenue from? And the other thing is spectators there on the ground. And I just was searching while you were talking, and you know, maybe I wasn't listening too attentively.
No, that's all right. It doesn't mean the show's gonna be any different.
A couple of days ago, it just came out that over 200,000 tickets are getting given away by Rio to like poor folks or something like that because they haven't even sold them. And you and I both know from the ticket sale system for the Olympic tickets what a huge fiasco and gouge it is.
Sure.
Like they do this whole lot. Every country gets an allotment. But sure. The truth is there's like a tremendous amount skimmed off the top before they get to the countries. It's a ridiculous prices for like these things. And I think they basically see how many people can we get to suck up these things. And we don't really care if we sell them all.
That said, though, one of the interesting things about when we went to the Olympics 4 years ago, and I understand, you know, London geographically is in a different place than obviously Rio, but Rio itself is still probably one of the 10 biggest, you know, metropolises in the world. So in terms of a potential, you know, catching area of spectators, it's not like, you know, they're having the Olympics on, you know, New Zealand in the middle of nowhere. Sorry, New Zealand. But what I'm saying is this. I definitely had the sense from the London Olympics, we were fortunate to get the number of tickets that we did.
Right.
And I remember going to all kinds of events and, you know, again, I think I ended up going to 5 and you went to 7 or 8. I was very aware that, ooh, we were lucky to get tickets. I mean, I remember we went to a group soccer match at Wembley, and Wembley was filled to its 78,000-79,000 capacity.
Yeah, it was, and it was a game between South Korea
and I think Nigeria or Ghana.
Not even that big, I don't think.
No,
I
don't want to kick into old, you know, British imperialistic racist overtones in terms of how I
these
countries. But yeah, it didn't strike me
you
as
mentioned there are like decent African patterns.
You know, it wasn't like it was England play.
And it was
GB
fully
play.
Sold out. We just before we came on the air, we had on the Mexico Fiji game, obviously actually Fiji was leading at halftime, but then Mexico kind of opened it up on them there in the second half.
And there seemed to be 19 people and someone had
room
for his dog.
It's a soccer match in Brazil, including a nation that's not that far away, that's really big into soccer, and there was like nobody there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was basically empty.
I mean, even watching so many events so far, I was struck at how Olympic tennis, I don't think anyone knew it was on.
Yeah.
Olympic tennis, I was watching some beach volleyball, which I know is this sort of trendy, and I think you went
beach
last time.
Beach volleyball had a lot of people. The games I've seen had a lot of people there, but of course a tiny little arena comparatively.
I'm like, ooh, what's going on? And I saw a story on the internet that the local organizing committee were apologizing to spectators because it took longer to get people through security lines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, look at the number of people in there. You didn't have to get that many people in.
Yeah.
And I just find that interesting. And now hearing that they couldn't give away tickets in Britain. Because there weren't any to give away.
Right, yeah.
They'd all
And the other thing that just came up, I didn't even check the article, but when I was searching on the stuff, it said 75% of the tickets went to Brazilians. And, like, I'm sure in London that was not the case. But that's, you know, given the nature of the city, you can fly to it easily. You've got everybody in Europe could basically take a train or a drive, you know, whatever it is they could do there. Obviously, very different situation, but sort of tells you. But does anybody care? I don't know that it matters. Listen, if the TV rights are the most important part. I mean, you want enough bodies in there, but I don't know that you care that much about it. You know how much probably so much gets skimmed off the top? I remember the fees that the broker would charge you or whoever it was who was in charge of the ticket thing. It's very weird. It's this outfit called CoSport.
Yes.
And I picture it being run out of some, I probably have said this before on the podcast, but I picture it being run out of somebody's garage because I've never seen them sell a ticket to anything else in my life. And yet they have the exclusive deal on distributing all these tickets and, you know, they got a website. You know, it's not like you call anybody and talk to anybody.
Frankly, it's two guys sitting in their basement running their business.
Instead of badly run website, basically, that would run this stuff.
Yeah, so. I don't know. It's just this odd sort of kind of, I'm trying to think of the right word, but I mean, the visuals are appalling. I will say that. The visuals are terrible.
Yeah, but that's one thing. If you're going to do this, you need to, like, put all the bodies where the camera is.
Yes.
You know, like, in this way, like, they just let everybody move up when that's going to happen kind of thing. It's like at baseball games a lot now. Those tickets behind home plate are a fortune, and so there'll be half as many. It won't be empty, but it's, like, sparsely populated, whereas the tickets in the rest of the place will be full. Well, you know, the other reason spectators stay away, though, right?
I was just about to say, let's get into this part of it.
Zika virus, man. You got to be careful with that Zika virus.
Which, is that real or fake, or what's
it? It's real, despite the fact that another member of the household is calling it tzatziki virus.
I call it that as well,
It's that yogurt sauce, you know, that you get with your gyro.
And very tasty it is, too. And funnily enough,
if that was the virus, we'd all be fired up.
But you know something? The Greeks invented the Olympics.
It all comes full circle.
It all comes full circle. Yeah, okay. All right, so there's Zika virus. But, you know, Rio de Janeiro doesn't seem to be in the grip of a Black Death, a bubonic plague.
And it's winter so they basically said there aren't even that many mosquitoes because it's wintertime. Now, like, on a proportional basis.
I mean, is that really scared that many spectators off?
Well, it scared Rory McIlroy away, right?
Well, we'll come to these characters in a moment,
I don't know. You know, like, I'm sure the hype of it did. You know, there were a number of articles that came out afterwards where basically, because people were maybe not even, the talk was, forget about what might happen to people there, but will they spread, like, if people catch it, will they spread around the world? And, like, the CDC said, it's just not even possible. Like, basically, you have to realize how many people travel internationally already, that these people going to Brazil don't really actually materially add to the flow of people around. It's not as if, like, half the world is going to Rio, and if, you know, a number of people catch it, plus most of the countries they go back to, there aren't mosquitoes to carry it around. Like, it's very, very low risk, and like, they're like, don't worry
about it. And frankly, really, if I'm a Zika carrying mosquito, yeah, and I have a choice between hanging out in the, you know, the volleyball stadium or the regular slums of Rio,
do they call it
probably going to stay in the slums of Rio to suck on human flesh.
Call it carnival in
Copacabana, isn't it?
No. Like the leading up to Lent, when they have the big thing. It's different in Portuguese than it is in Spanish.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Anyway, so that's the big party. I don't think it's a particularly big deal. I mean, wear some bug spray.
I think it's an excuse used by pro athletes who don't want to travel 6 hours on a plane to hang their own shower curtain. I think that's what it comes down to.
Well, which leads into our golfers, because I think that one of the biggest groups of people that said, "Nah, I'm going to take a pass."
What are golfers?
Golf is a new sport. So we'll talk about these both at the same time. We were going to talk about a couple of new sports. Golf is one, and rugby is the other one. That are new. We'll come to those in due turn. But here, golf is like, they got these great hopes for golf. You know, we're going to bring this back. It was in the Olympics in 1904, and I think 1900. Yeah, okay. Yeah, there was golf, and then hasn't been since 1904. There hasn't been any golf.
Okay,
and so we're going to bring this back. It's going to be a big deal. And then promptly, basically, I think out of the top 10 people in the world, about half of them said,
"I don't want to do this." On the men's side, to be fair, the top ranked female players, not a single one of them has bailed. So, you know, Koreans, Americans, you know, some GB players, the top female players in the world, all committed. Apparently not a single one dropped out. On the men's side, yeah, you've got basically most of the top 10 found a reason to not show up.
Yeah. And Rory in particular cited the Zika. I think not all of them have said Zika was the issue, but Rory's story was Zika virus, and me and my fiance, I don't even think he's married yet, we're talking about getting pregnant at some time, because that's the big risk, of course, the Zika virus is to pregnant women.
But, you know, Rory, but like,
it was so tangential. Yeah, no, I think he moderated when people were like, you know, people don't believe you.
No, Rory used Zika as an excuse. And then apparently a couple of weeks later, after getting pounded in the press, he then came out with, and in a strange way, I kind of agree with him. He came out with this notion that he kind of didn't really feel that golf was an Olympic sport, and he wanted to stay home and watch on TV all the sports that, in his mind, were the Olympics. And while, obviously, in this instance, multimillionaire / billionaire top professional athlete says that, does reek of, I don't know, maybe a slightly warped perspective. If I say exactly the same things, I can make a pretty compelling argument for that. And that's the interesting thing about it. But, you know, basically he just didn't commit. I think at the end of the day, what happened was, because he threw out two excuses, basically the reason is I just can't be bothered. And unfortunately for him, he made the mistake of throwing out two excuses instead of just going down with the one excuse and taking it on the chin. If he'd said from the start, guys, I don't believe golf is an Olympic sport, I don't want to compete, I'm going to stay home and watch the Olympics.
Well, then, you know what he said, though? He said he's not even going to watch it. Like, here's the thing. I think there's
no, but he's going to stay home and watch what? I thought he said he was going to stay home and watch the events that, to him, are the Olympics.
Like, oh, yeah. That's
what I meant. I don't mean Olympic golf.
Well, I kind of
agree with it.
I agree with him. Like, the thing is about the golf, right? So we're mishmashing a bunch of topics together.
But
it's fine.
This is the point about the Olympics. The Olympics has become a mishmash.
No. I'm going to make that our point. Organization of our podcast in my mind is going out the window. So I'm going to be. I got to make sure I remember everything I want to say. But the
getting married hasn't affected my training at all.
The sport is interest. Like, you should do it different. Like, because they're just playing stroke play. I mean, for people who don't know golf well, stroke play is what you see on the PGA every week. Where basically it's the number of strokes. You know, you have a cut, and then you drop a bunch of people out. I don't even know if they have a cut in this, because only 60 people are playing, but probably don't. They probably just play their full number of rounds. But then, you know, there'll be a gold, and there'll be a silver, and whoever has the best scores. Well, it would have been much more interesting if you wanted to make the Olympic thing, to do a different format. Like apparently one of the U.S. guys thought it was a two-man team thing until he showed up. Basically, it was like, oh, we're playing in, okay. Sure, I paid a lot of attention to this. But that would make it interesting, right? Yeah. That would make it sort of, you know, we're going to flash ahead to rugby. Rugby, they're doing the sevens.
They're not doing full rugby.
Yeah, so the sevens is a smaller team. Well, we'll come back to that in a second. But as a contrast. But what do I care to see the same people who play in the PGA every week showing up and playing in the Olympics? There's not going to, and it's going to be less because you're going to have a bunch of people from countries because everybody can, you know, qualifiers are going to be no chance. They're just not even in there at all, kind of thing. Instead of having 20 people from the US, I mean, the US has four. I think Great Britain probably got offered four or something like that.
Yeah.
Because depending upon how many people you had highly ranked. But there's nothing interesting about this round of golf.
No, it's just,
a round of golf that they don't get paid for.
Yeah.
you know? So who cares if you had done it as match play, you know, like meaning where it's the pairs up the opposite, or you've done team match play, or even team stroke play. I was looking up collegiate tournaments are mostly team stroke play. So they just aggregate your top four. I think you put five golfers and you aggregate your top four in order to come up with a score.
They could have done something like that.
That would have been much more interesting if people relying on each other and doing things. But instead they just say, okay, we're just going to play a round of golf. Well, I don't think anybody cares.
How does the tennis work?
I think they do. Do they do group and then
they do group, don't they? It's not just a straight.
Although Venus lost,
but she's still in it. She'll play again.
You sure?
Yeah, I think it's a sort of a round robin, so you're guaranteed a couple of games. That makes sense. Something. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, it is a slightly different format to what is being funneled up every week.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I've always found Olympic soccer this sort of interesting animal. Now I know.
Well, and they have a variation they do with the youth, right? Like, so they're basically saying it's like
on the men's side
under 23. Well, that's true.
That's the deal the Olympics always did with FIFA.
But that's because the balance.
That was the deal the Olympics did with FIFA because FIFA were like, we've got the World Cup. Well, that's what makes
it like women's Olympic soccer has been independently interesting. I mean, actually, with the ascension of the World Cup over the past few years, I think this is going to be more of a competitive thing. But for years, the women's Olympics was maybe, you know, the paramount award you could win in golf. I mean, soccer. Whereas the men's was obviously, what are we going to do? Do the same thing all over again? And so they created this youth version. I understand, like, it was with FIFA saying, listen, don't step on our toes.
But, sure.
But it made it something sort of interesting to do, whereas the golf is just whatever the golf is. And here's the, like, well, let's contrast it with what they're doing with rugby sevens. Like, so rugby, first of all, rugby's foreign to most people anyway. You know, we don't watch it. Most of us know a little bit about rugby, but we don't watch it on a regular basis.
No.
So this is an ideal, to my mind, Olympic sport.
Yes.
Put this in there. I know there is a Rugby World Cup that people follow, but...
No, but for those who don't know, there's rugby, which is a 15-man game, right. And then there's sevens, which is a...
The exact same size field.
But it's half the number of players.
Right.
It's a very quick game.
It's a very fast game, and it's designed for like tournament play. We could play a bunch of games in a row.
So metaphorically, I was going to say rugby sevens is to rugby what beach volleyball is to volleyball, but even that's an inaccurate statement.
What it is like... 3-on-3 basketball, half court.
I think that's a much better.
There's a version of football for small schools where they have like smaller lines.
Oh, American football. Yeah.
Like that's what I mean. Like where they have lesser.
It is basically rugby, but it's slightly smaller teams, but ultimately
smaller players too. As a result, because you don't have this huge scrum of the bodies in the middle. Right before this morning, I watched U.S. and Australia tie. Australia tied them on like the last second. U.S. was all posed to win. It would have been a pretty decent upset. I should say. It was really good. I mean, it was really interesting. People run around. I didn't totally understand everything.
But it's interesting. You know, if you're going to introduce a sport to the Olympics, that's, you know, how they're doing it with rugby is probably kind of the way to do it.
Plus, it's exciting, you know, realize for the rugby people, this is a great deal because you've got people who like the Olympics. They're open enough in spirit that they're going to watch some different sports or something like that. You know, like they're interested in different things. You throw them some rugby matches, and now, you know what? The people who watch that, now they might be more interested in the next World Cup. Or they might be interested in their nation's team and national team or their college team.
I mean, it's win-win-win.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a sales technique. Whereas golf, they don't benefit from that. There's not a bunch of people who'd be like, oh, I've seen Olympic golf now, I'm going to start following the tour.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the interesting thing. And the Olympics benefits from bringing in a sport. It brings in a new marketplace. The people that administrate rugby, and so I mean way off there in the higher strata of organizing these sports, they get to expose their sport. And at the same time, if I'm a rugby player, here is a chance for me to have a true pinnacle moment to aspire to experience you know, that yes, obviously Rugby Sevens has a very famous tournament in Hong Kong that is sort of the big moment on Rugby Sevens' calendar. But at the end of the day, I think it's fair to say that if I'm a Rugby Sevens player and I'm winning an Olympic medal, yeah, that's right there. Whereas I'm not entirely convinced, and I don't want to pick on the golfers, but, you know, if my whole career is, yeah, I won a couple of Olympic medals, but I never won the Masters or the Open, yeah. I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, my career is complete. It is.
Plus, there's multiple international events in golf that are sort of exotic that people would watch anyway.
Yeah, so like, and I do
Davis
wanna,
Cup and
that
the Ryder
said,
Cup.
I think not I want to be fair on tennis. Tennis players have tended to embrace Olympic tennis clearly more so than the golfers are.
I wonder if that's partly true. Like the fact that the Olympic tennis has been a thing for a little while. I mean,
I think it becomes
its own thing. Whereas the golf, you're starting from zero.
But again, at the end of the day, if I'm a tennis player and my career is defined by my Olympic medal, then, you know, you and I sitting around going, yeah, she couldn't win any Grand Slams.
Yeah.
You know, oh, wow. Everyone looks back fondly. Andy Murray carried the flag in for Great Britain, which was a story in itself for all kinds of reasons to do with Scotland and Brexit and all sorts of things. But, you know, I remember when Andy Murray won his Olympic medal, it was a big deal. That said, Andy Murray had already won Wimbledon. He'd already broken through. So it came at a different point in his career.
Plus, those Olympics were in London. And so
So what I'm saying is, you know, and I know it sounds like we're here. What's that wonderful phrase that you always use about, you know, it's a difference, not a such and such. But I can't remember what it is now, and I'm going to get lost in that. But a lot of it does depend on sort of your perspective going in as an athlete. And you're right. Tennis is... I think golf was trying to go, well, you know, the Olympics is now a stop for a tennis player, and golf are hoping that it's going to get there. But unfortunately, if this is how you've started, I don't think there's anything to it.
So before we talk a little... Well, so the other thing about it is I hesitate to call rugby an up-and-coming sport in an era where we're all sensitive to concussions and things like that. I think they're going to have some trouble there. I don't think that's going to be like sport of the future the way some other things. But meanwhile, golf is, you know, for all reports say it's on its way down in a sense. I mean, not that it's going to collapse, but golf.
The big boom in the 90s is definitely over.
They're 10 years late for the party, basically, yes. Because, yes. You know, there was an article in the paper in the Post this week, Drew Harwell saying, hey, the joke opening line was the last golfer on the course, please turn off the cart, because the numbers of people going have really dropped off. Nike, who really went into golf
big time
with Tiger Woods, is now dropping its golf. They're still going to make clothes, but they're dropping all the like clubs and things. Yeah. Clothes and shoes they'll still make, but you know, all the clubs and balls and everything else where they had really gotten into this stuff. Apparently it's like total money loser for them. It's like below extreme sports or below skateboarding in terms of their sales.
It's a completely different production cycle line, what type of thing. And I think putting out a golf shirt. Yeah,
it's TaylorMade, which is Adidas, or maybe it's off of Adidas. It used to be Adidas owned. It may have spun off, but they're in rough shape too, and they're kind of coming apart. So, you know, this is, and we know from going to courses, it's way easier than it used to be in terms of your public courses on a course.
To your point, you know, Olympic golf is 20 years too late. They should have done it in the 2004 Olympics, and there you go. It would have made sense, and who knows? Every player might have shown up, and, you know, because it's interesting. In the pre-Olympic press conference that the IOC had, they discussed some of the sports that are going to be in the next Olympics, which I think is in Japan.
Yep, Tokyo.
Is it in Tokyo? And I've got a list here. Skateboard, surfing, karate, baseball and softball. Now, with the exception of baseball and softball, it seems to be one of those sports that cycles in and out of the Olympics. Because it used to be an Olympic
baseball?
Sport. Baseball was. What was his name? Because I remember he was the pitcher for the U.S. team. Who was the guy from Michigan who only had one hand?
Abbott.
He was on the men's team when they had baseball and softball, because it used to be a collegiate
team. Well, is it going to be amateur? Is it going to be...
We don't know. But so anyway, with the exception of baseball and softball that has sort of cycled in and out over the last 40 years, you know, obviously skateboarding is brand new. would imagine surfing is brand new, and I don't know the history, but off the top of my head, I wouldn't be surprised if karate once existed and then got dropped and then came back. But there already are other martial arts. There's judo. Right. I think there's Olympic taekwondo.
If you had told me karate was in already, I
wouldn't have gone, oh, really? Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But so it's not a big, to me, that's not a stretch bringing them in. Skateboarding, surfing, frankly, I don't want to knock those sports.
It's just more things that involve judges, which I don't like, you know?
No, but it's also a very brazen money grab
thing.
And I don't blame them, because the Olympics has to make money, because clearly they're not making it this time. Or at least Rio's not making any money this time around if it's now giving away tickets hand over foot. I don't know. This is my thing with the Olympics. And this is why...
Baseball, 1912, 1936, 56, 64, 84, 88, 92, 96... Oh,
geez. It comes and goes, doesn't it?
Well, it was pretty continuous from 92 on. When did they only drop in 2008?
Yeah, and it's back again. Well, why did you drop it? Yeah, I don't know.
Dead lacrosse for a while. They could bring that back.
I think because I'm not sure what the parameters are for these sports. I think there needs to be enough people in different countries that play it.
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. And you don't want to like lacrosse might be a tough one now because it'd just be a U.S. Canada game.
Yeah. Although saying this, you know, skateboarding, surfing, and karate, I am sure they are sports. They are sports where you don't. Okay, I was watching. I caught the end of the opening ceremonies, and when I say the end, I think they're on like the M's when the M countries rolling in. Yeah,
did they do it alphabetically?
And they did it alphabetically, but in Portuguese.
Okay.
Which was apparently why the U.S. was way up front.
EU.
Maybe. That might be it. And I remember I turned it on during the M's, and there are a whole lot of countries that, to be honest with you, I hadn't heard of. And NBC flashed up how big the country was and then how many athletes they had. So, you know, Nepal rolled through. They've got so many people live there. Their team total is 4. Now, my point being is this. If you add skateboarding, surfing, and karate, yeah, Nepal can probably find someone who's done a bit of boarding there, and they can get him in. And so what I'm saying is you can fill out your sport.
I don't think any surfboarders in Nepal.
They're all in the X Games because it's snow surfing. Yeah. But baseball and softball is probably a slightly harder sell because you've got to find countries that support it. Do you know what I mean?
Nowadays baseball...
Karate? Has gotten some dude in Moldova that
baseball
does karate.
Has gotten increasingly international, so it doesn't surprise me too much they'd come back to the baseball piece of it, but it'd be interesting to see who they have playing this stuff, if it's collegiate again or what it is. But
I'm not going to lie, and I want to bring it back to where we started when we both said we went to the last Olympics. I remember we'd ended up, you know, we said before the sort of things we'd ended up to tickets to. And I remember I was excited to see handball because that was this sport that I only had kind of this
passing. For anybody who doesn't know, team handball. It's not a thing where you slap against a wall. It's you got a goal and you run around, you it's jump like in soccer, the air and you throw a ball with your hands
and stuff. Yeah, but I was excited. That was a sport that I kind of sort of vaguely seen clips on TV and I'm like, ooh, I'm excited to see this. There was a sense that it was, you know, for those handball players, this was it. This was...
Oh, yeah. They don't get paid. I mean, maybe they get paid something if they're on the national team, like some sort of stipend from McDonald's donations. But
they
don't make a living doing it.
I'm going to pick on baseball. Seeing the return of baseball, which has been in and then was out and then is back in again. The Olympics isn't the pinnacle for baseball. If I'm Honduras,
but that's not right.
If I'm in the Dominican Republic, I'm probably going to make my
Olympic baseball
team. There is an international
competition in baseball. What is that called?
Yeah, it's called the Major Leagues.
No. You need an international competition.
But the
put it this way. Baseball's different because it's so country focused. There's some merit to an international competition in that because it doesn't even happen in regularly. The ones like golf where that's what happens every single week.
Yeah, okay. I take your point there. I just feel at the end of the day, you know, as much as my gut reaction when I hear that skateboarding and surfing is coming in is this seems like some attempt to grab the youth TV market that grow up on X Games. At the end of the day, if I'm a skateboarder and I get an Olympic medal, this is it for me. Yeah. This is what it's all about.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, now that I've returned to being an armchair watcher of the Olympics, I remember there was a moment the first Saturday of competition, and I'm looking at the 60 TV channels in my area that I can get Olympics. And I'm desperately hunting for Olympic sports. And what I mean by that is, this is my one moment in 4 years when I'll watch some table tennis. Mm-hmm. But my choice at like 2 PM was regular tennis, a couple of basketball games, a couple of soccer games, and then the only other sport, which not my fault that I don't like it, was beach volleyball. Mm-hmm. So I had one Olympic sport and then a whole load of other things where, yeah, I don't watch this because I can watch it better at different times.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not sure. Then in a strange way, I get it why in Rio they're giving away tickets. Because what are people... we make the point earlier about there was no one at the Mexico-Fiji soccer game. Mm-hmm. But I'm a discerning Brazilian soccer fan. I ain't going to watch any old rubbish. Do you know what I mean? There is that...
Well, are you saying the British folks are not discerning? Because they packed Wembley.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. I don't know. It's a distinction without a difference. I don't know. The Olympics is in this funny... It's reverted back to this strange place with me where, I had an experience. I decided to watch, again, as we established on the last show, I'm a cyclist and I'm a cycling fan. And I decided to watch the men's road race.
Right.
160 kilometers, I think it was, up around. It was around.
It's 82 miles or something like that.
Something like that. It was about 8,200 miles. It was around Rio. They did a couple of climbs.
And so cobblestones.
There was a cobblestone section. And I'm like, okay, I like cycling. Let me watch it. Wasn't on TV. I had to find it online. Watched it online. Very exciting race. Couple of crashes at the end that sort of had a impact on things. And the rules of the race are slightly different in the Olympics in that none of the riders have radios. There's no radios, which does make a different spectacle. But I'm watching it and I'm thinking, yeah, this is exciting because I like the sport, but I don't know. We've just finished watching the tour and the World Championships are in a couple of weeks and it just sort of sits in there, this strange sort of... Whereas track cycling is different.
Yeah, well, at least the cycling, this is a one-day event. And so, like, the thing with the tour is you're really rewarding people who can keep up over time, team play, all this sort of stuff. So I do think it's a bit different. And giving it, like, there's no preliminary, like, just giving it one day. It was on at 8:30 in the morning on the day after the opening ceremony. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they literally are like, get it out of the way, we're done. And I thought to myself, you just got to, if these people all did the Tour de France, why don't you give them another week of the rest and let them cycle a little bit later. But they put it right up front. I think that's perfectly fair. They're not overplaying it. Like, it's not...
No, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. Like, the basketball, like, they have, you know, special channels on for the basketball for both men's and women's.
Why?
On the Olympics. And it's every game. And I know they're like, people like to watch basketball anytime, but it's just too much. You know, like, you're dedicating resources. Whereas this, by contrast, the men's road race takes very little resource in terms of media. It's on Sunday. You know, listen, fine, go ahead.
How attractive is it to watch here in the U.S.? You've just said people will watch basketball pretty much any time.
I'm not sure
how many basketball fans are going to sit through the U.S. whacking Mongolia by 94 points.
Well, forget about that. It's like, what about Mongolia playing Fiji? Like, that's the game. Right. Like, you know, but, I mean, at least the U.S., you're like watching it to see, well, how much can they beat them
by?
But the other games, but I think we undersell the fact that there's a segment of the population the TV is on. Oh, basketball. I will watch basketball.
Okay. I don't know. I just
probably
find
more than soccer. We really would be nice to get like really detailed ratings of all these things.
Maybe we will on our next show. Because I was curious. I like watching. I'm a sucker for sports. I sat there on the TV and I watched archery for about half an hour. And I don't want to knock archery. It's like watching bowling. You either knock them all down or you don't. But at the same time, it was kind of cool.
I think U.S.'s first gold was an air rifle.
There you go. And I'm like, if I'm watching that for 20 minutes, great. That's the Olympics to me.
Yeah.
But I'm not going out of my way to watch, another group soccer match.
Yeah.
It's an interesting
soccer
thing.
Channel, I think, has got something like 6 games on today. I'm like, I'm not going to watch all those.
Yeah,
games.
Really. Yeah. One thing I will say about the Olympics, to circle back to the cycling. So I'm watching it on the internet, and... The coverage was pretty good. High definition feed for the first 6 hours of the race. And then in the last 15 minutes, the feed just went completely. And the climax of the race was, it was like internet from 2001. It was terrible. And I don't know.
So what, you're upset about your Wi-Fi signal in your place?
It wasn't. It's not my Wi-Fi signal. My Wi-Fi signal, because it was fine the rest of the day. Here was one thing. And again, I don't want to just sit and have us reminisce about our own holidays over time. I remember when we went to London to watch the Olympics, one of the neatest things was the BBC had something where you could press a button on your remote and go and watch your sport. And I'm still curious as to why that's still not quite the case here in America, the biggest TV market in the world.
Socialism versus capitalism.
Well, yeah, maybe that's what it is,
Government-owned, isn't the BBC government-owned?
Yeah, it's taxpayer-funded, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, like, you know, they don't have to worry about whether to spend the money on this special thing in the London Olympics.
But apparently you can go and watch these things on your tablet.
We were talking about new sports to add. There was an article in the Post today by Adam Kilgore, Washington Post again, not the New York Post, talking about another sport that last time it was played in 1904, or played is probably too strong a word, as we'll describe in a second here, but same time as the golf, and the men, U.S. men, diving related, they took all three medals, and it's called the plunge for distance. And to read off just one of the paragraphs here, a diver leaps from an 18-inch platform and has 60 seconds to travel as far across the pool as possible without moving his arms or legs.
That would be a cool sport.
So that's like the whole thing is you just jump in. And I saw a picture. And what they do is they put their arm. And the whole thing was like to lock everything else, like to be.
Yeah.
And you just would see how far you can make it in 60 seconds.
The only thing that would be with those underwater cameras and stuff now.
Exactly.
That would be really great. Yeah. I want to shout out someone who wrote an article. And I think he wrote it in GQ, a British sports writer called Martin Samuel. He said he would like to see darts in the Olympics. And to be honest with you,
what's his name? Who's the guy who did the dart stuff in Great Britain and made millions off of it?
Phil the Power Taylor.
The producer. He's always
Barry Hearn.
Yeah, Barry Hearn like popularized it and turned it into a thing that everybody watches on TV.
Gets huge ratings in Britain. It's interesting. Sitting there yesterday watching archery and air rifle, why isn't darts in the Olympics?
I was wrong.
That's what I'm saying. I think that it's interesting.
They put their hands over their head. So it's like they just float.
I think that would be really cool. And again, I can just see it nowadays with those underwater cameras. Yeah. That would be a great TV sport. Again, I just feel like the Olympics, there's still a bit. If I was Olympic commissioner for the week, I would get the whole list in front of me. I'd have two pens. I'd have a black marker pen to just go through. I would go through and I would trim out a lot of sports. Mm-hmm. But I would also have
If you can get the number of sports low enough, then you won't need the 11,000 spots for dorm. You can put the people in the hotel rooms after all.
I'm trying to think of who some of the major sponsors on TV for the Olympics are. I think BMW, Citibank.
I think Coca-Cola, Budweiser.
Hilton or one of these people. I'm sure they would love to get in there and go, we are the official accommodations of the Olympics.
Keep your tangents up. Apparently, the Olympic Village had no coffee. And somebody said that the reason was a Coca-Cola sponsorship, that Coca-Cola had the corner on caffeine and they wouldn't allow other types of caffeine to be in the village. Now, I find that hard to believe.
In Brazil, of all places. Was it Frank Sinatra saying, they've got a lot of coffee in Brazil?
I don't know.
That's a Frank Sinatra song.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I think he did
Going straight into next year's highlights, though.
He did it better than that, dear old Frank. Yeah, whatever, anyway. So there you go. There's our Olympic rant.
There was a thing about Rory McIlroy. He tweeted just the...
We've hammered Rory McIlroy.
A couple of Irish boxers tweeted at him, where you send the message to him. One of them was a picture of him with Ricky Fowler saying, come on, Rory, get on over here, or something like that. Another was a picture with Rory McIlroy's ex-fiance, who I guess is also an Olympian in something.
She's a tennis player.
Okay, yeah.
What's her name?
So it's a picture of her sitting on the lap of a boxer, basically saying, look who I'm here with, or something like that. And apparently he sent something back saying, it was very, everybody was giving him credit because his rejoinder to them was, hey, if you guys are as good at boxing as you are at tweeting, we're coming back with golds.
That's good on him.
Yeah.
Exit question for you. How much of the Olympics are you going to watch over between now and the next show? Well,
because the other member of the household's out of town this week, I might watch a lot more than you think, because at least this week I won't really have anything else to do in the evening other than watch Olympics and eat bagels.
Yeah, there you go, because bagels is your thing when you're
rings,
on your own.
You know,
yeah.
The five rings of the...
Oh, you can make rings with bagels. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should put that as the blog post. Mm. It's interesting. As much as I sort of hammer the Olympics a little bit, when it's on... Again, you can tell I was unhappy that when I went through six Olympic channels, I couldn't find what I felt was an Olympic sport. But at the end of the day, the fact was I woke up and I wanted to look to have it on. Yeah. And that's what it is with the Olympics, isn't it?
The swimming, I'm not too big on, but for whatever reason, when you have that on, it's perfect to just have on and do a bunch of other things, and you can pay attention when the things happen. I mean, like when the track and field comes on, I'll probably just have that on all the time. I would love if they would just show you the track and field and just show it all, like show all the heats and show all none of this like personal interest stories and, well, there's no U.S. people in that heat, we won't bother showing it kind of thing. Just show me all of the stuff and I will watch it.
I sometimes feel that
at least I'll have it on and you'll get credit with your advertiser. They don't know whether my eyes are on it or not.
I'm going to now sound like some deranged, prejudiced imperialist, but I sometimes feel like the second to last team that was brought into the stadium, obviously the host nation always comes last, was Brazil. The second to last team was the refugee team.
Yeah.
And I do feel a little bit, well, you know, you get me in a corner and I'm going to debate why they're even in it. But I do feel in a strange way that they're only in so that TV can run hours of human interest stories about the refugees.
Sure, every single one of them is going to have a story. Off the bat, they're refugees.
But it was interesting. That did get in the Maracanã Stadium on Friday, that did get the biggest, the second.
There's a lot of them around right now. So
I don't want to, I'm not going to pile on refugees in general.
You've gotten softer. You're married and now you're kind-hearted.
Is there anything else in the Olympics?
I don't think so.
This has been the Atlantic Voice. I'm Zeff.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeff on the Atlantic Voice podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.